Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends in the public media spectrum across the region. It is Tuesday, the 17th of March, 2026. A little touch of the green today. A recent federal court ruling may increase what some Montanans pay for electricity. The order directs certain dams in the Northwest to limit the amount of water generating electricity. The change marks the latest strain on Western electricity cooperatives. Montana Public Radio's Victoria Traxler has more.
A district court judge in Oregon ordered some federal dams in the Columbia River Basin to operate at levels that prioritize the health of salmon species. This means less hydropower generation, particularly in the spring and fall during spawning seasons. Head of the Montana Electric Cooperative Association, Mark Lambrecht, says these changes will show up on members' bills.
Bonneville Power Administration will have to go out onto the market to purchase additional generation.
The Bonneville Power Administration distributes power from these dams to Western Montana cooperatives. Lambrecht says the cost of BPA purchasing the lost generation will have ripple effects. Nearly a quarter of Montana meters are tied to this federal agency. A spokesperson for Flathead Electric Co-op says it anticipates at least a 4% increase for their members. Trevor Park with Dillon-based Vigilante Electric says their rates are going up too. The court order is not the only reason why.
We've had double-digit rate increases over the last few years to meet up with the cost of labor and materials.
The energy landscape is strained across the entire Pacific Northwest. BPA projected tens of millions of dollars in revenue losses in 2025. It cited high prices, low stream flows, and dry weather as the main drivers. Meanwhile, energy demand is projected to increase by 30% in the region over the next decade. Park says these factors make it hard to keep costs down.
Customers were used to having the same rates for a long period of time, and then it's all just kind of hit us at once over the last 3 or 4 years.
To help mitigate costs to members, both Lambrecht and Park say they're exploring various solutions, including joining with other larger cooperatives. In Missoula, I'm Victoria Traxler.
The state's largest utility is signing agreements to power data centers. But as Montana Public Radio's Ellis Julin reports, the details of those agreements have remained unavailable to the public. Now a coalition of climate and energy groups is demanding state regulators release that information.
Northwestern Energy signed letters of intent with three data center developers to power the warehouse-sized facilities. The Public Service Commission is responsible for regulating monopoly utilities. Northwestern Energy provided the PSC with heavily redacted copies of the letters late last year. The PSC granted the utility a protective order to allow the documents to remain confidential and inaccessible to the public. In a motion filed Wednesday, public interest groups are challenging the order, saying it violates Montanans' constitutional right to know. They argue without knowing the nature of the agreements and the plans for how to regulate, the utility could end up passing along the costs of generating power for data centers to its existing customers. Amy Sillenberg is with Climate Smart Missoula, one of the groups involved in the motion.
And if data centers are going to be subsidized and increase all our rates, people aren't going to be able to keep their homes cool and comfortable and with clean air. So it matters so much that we have affordable electricity rates and that people can participate in how those rates are decided.
Northwestern Energy serves 800,000 customers in Montana. Since those customers are captive ratepayers, Sillenberg worries they could end up paying more for power without transparency from the utility. In Missoula, I'm Ellis Julin.
A state law restricting drag story times remains on hold nearly 3 years after its passage. House Bill 359 prohibits sexually oriented shows at libraries, schools, or other public areas, with fines starting at $1,000. Last week, the U.S. Court of Appeals upheld a preliminary injunction stopping enforcement of the law until a final verdict is reached. A group of businesses and individuals sued the Montana Attorney General and State Superintendent soon after legislators passed the law in 2023. They argued the law hurts their First Amendment right of expression and is overly broad, leaving it up to interpretation. Plaintiffs include a community theater concerned about enforcement against unrated films and a transgender woman whose speaking engagement was canceled at a public library, citing the law. In its Friday opinion, the Court of Appeals says plaintiffs were able to demonstrate the harm of the law and affirmed the lower court's finding. Montana's industrialized livestock facilities are required to get Clean Water Act permits before discharging pollutants into any local waterway, but many of them don't. Laura Hatch with Big Sky Connection has the details.
Runoff from industrialized agriculture is a leading cause of water pollution in Montana and the U.S., yet large livestock facilities often go unchecked. Groups voicing concerns about this say many of them don't have permits required by the Clean Water Act. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, Montana has 200 confined animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. Only 71 of them have the permits. Attorney Brian Hurlbut with Advocates for the West says one loophole for CAFOs is protection from trade secret laws in Montana and other states.
Citizens are not able to get a lot of the documents that these CAFOs produce about how they store and manage and handle all of their manure and what happens with it.
The Environmental Protection Agency considers CAFOs source point polluters, meaning they send pollution into rivers using pipes, ditches, or other channels. These operations must get Clean Water Act permits before discharging pollutants into bodies of water. Hurlbut says CAFOs also get away without permits because state environmental quality departments and the EPA haven't aggressively enforced the requirement. Hurlbut believes water quality monitoring will get even worse under the Trump administration, which has already proposed narrowing the types of streams and wetlands the Clean Water Act will protect. He wants the public to understand how big this issue is and how agriculture has changed in the past few decades.
While there certainly are still smaller family farms, a lot of this pollution is being driven by big ag and huge corporations that are taking advantage of the places where they're operating.
The Trump administration contends limiting protections for streams and wetlands would reduce the regulatory burden on landowners and allow for economic growth. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Wyoming Game and Fish Department recently released a plan for how to manage the 10,000 elk that make up the Jackson herd. As Jackson Hole Community Radio's Jenna McMurtry reports, it's part of a statewide plan to reduce the spread of disease and slowly wean elk off feed grounds.
Wyoming is the only state in the country with a comprehensive elk feeding program, which keeps the population artificially high. The in-depth plan is a playbook of 37 immediate measures, and another 11 more for later, should the first series get implemented. At a recent workshop in Jackson, members of the public wanted to better understand why elk have left their native winter range in the Gros Ventre drainage. Jackson's Regional Wildlife Supervisor Brad Hovinge says analyzing just that is part of the action plan.
We don't exactly know everything we'd like to know about why that happens. We do know over time elk have used native winter range in the Gros Ventre less.
The federal management plan instead calls for a decrease in population there. For KHOL, I'm Jenna McMurtry.
For the first time since 2009, the Rocky Mountain College men's basketball team is headed to the round of 16 at the site of the NAIA Men's National Championship in Kansas City, Missouri. Last time the team made it to the round of 16 was in 2009 when they went all the way, winning the NAIA National Championship. The Battling Bears earned their trip to the next round with a nail-biting 67-66 win over the Bears' home court against the Mustangs of the Masters University, thanks to two Rocky free throws with 10 seconds left to play. The win was the team's 30th of the season, the most in program history. The Rocky men will play Friday night in Kansas City against fellow Frontier Conference team Bellevue University of Nebraska. Dakota State is the only Frontier Conference women's team to advance to the round of 16. They will play Indiana Wesleyan Thursday afternoon in Sioux City, Iowa. Montana State women's basketball postseason is continuing as the team has been selected to play in the Women's National Invitational Tournament, or WNIT. The Cats are one of 48 teams selected to play in the 28th annual postseason WNIT. MSU was an automatic qualifier as the Big Sky Conference's top seed that did not receive an NCAA tournament invitation. The Cats will play the winner of the San Francisco-Utah Valley first-round game at a place and time yet to be announced. Montana State says this is the fourth WNIT bid. The Cats are winless in five previous games. When your trumpet is crumpled or your flute sounds flat, rural western Montana can be a tough place to find a fix. Enter Music Medics, an instrument repair shop that hits the road to keep school bands across the region playing in tune. Montana Public Radio's Austin Amistoy caught a ride to learn more.
Okay, and then let me grab this one real quick.
St. Ignatius band teacher Kendall Baldwin hefts a large black saxophone case from a locker in her classroom and starts undoing the clasps.
He's having problems with his.
One of her students has a saxophone struggling to hit a low C note. The gleaming golden instrument looks wildly complicated with its maze of levers, valves, and buttons. But music medic Jennifer Kirby is there to take a look, and she's seen her share of saxophones through the years.
It does seem loose, but it's supposed to slide like that.
A few tweaks later, the student gives the sax a try.
Try to go down to that low C bottom.
There's some improvement, but not enough. It needs a full diagnosis back at the Music Medics repair shop. For Miss Baldwin, this service can make the difference between pitch-perfect playing and a frustratingly flat sound for her students.
But some of the instruments are awesome and in great shape, but just need a little tune-up. And so to be able to keep them running, having these guys, yeah, they've been... Music Medics has been my saving grace this last year.
The stop at St. Ignatius High School is one of five Kirby makes that day, starting in Polson and winding her way down the Flathead and Jocko Valleys back to her home base in Missoula. She picks up clarinets, trumpets, and saxophones for repair, drops off finished instruments, and brings supplies like valve oil, strings, and reeds in a few repurposed boxes.
I think it's technically an ammo box, but I put reeds in it.
That's very Montana.
Very, very Montana.
Kirby provides a crucial service for schools across western Montana, where hundreds of miles often separate small towns from the nearest repair shop. She travels to more than 50 schools over a two-week circuit. Last summer, she says Music Medics fixed more than 900 school instruments. Kirby made a career in music, teaching band in Frenchtown for 21 years. She joined Music Medics last fall as their new school outreach representative. Kirby says keeping instruments in shape keeps kids involved in music. That can be a lifeline, she says.
It's that one thing that they're able to do for a long period of time that carries them through. They find success in it where they might not find success in a traditional academic classroom.
After running her route, Kirby returns to the clinic in Missoula. It's a shop behind a big garage door. That's where the instruments pass through the hands of Matt Wilson. He's been repairing instruments for more than 30 years. As to why he does the work...
It suits me.
He doesn't sleep.
Oh, I sleep.
Wilson says it's much like maintaining a car. The instruments need regular upkeep to function well. If they don't get it, trumpet slides can jam, clarinet keypads can come ajar, and the next thing you know, you're deeply out of tune. The schools pay Wilson for working on their instruments, as do private clients, but he always prioritizes student bands.
People don't realize how poorly their instrument's working until it's fixed, because they learn how to play past the problems until finally one note just doesn't want to work anymore. Then when you fix the whole thing, it's like a new instrument to them again.
Wilson expects to fix even more instruments this summer than last, helping bands across the state stay on tempo and in tune. In Missoula, I'm Austin Amistoy.
That's The Worm for this Tuesday. Catch up with us tomorrow morning. We'll have another episode for you early birds then.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal Art Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.